This is One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody. Welcome to a Friday edition of One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. Both of Irish descent, right? You think you are? Tasker sounds Irish to me, Steve.
I'm a little bit of a mutt, I think. To be honest.
I got to believe you got a little Emerald Isle.
Yeah, I mean, I think I do. I saw a tombstone of a Tasker in Stratford-upon-Avon.
Well, then it's settled.
And it's got to be, right?
Welcome to the
close
tribe.
Enough to Ireland. It's, you know, British, no. Britain. Stratford-upon-Avon. It's not quite, it's, you know.
I am a quarter
England.
Irish.
Quarter?
Yeah, but I've got, I know I've got family in Londonderry over there.
London who, what?
Londonderry.
Oh, yeah, okay.
That's one of the...
I have visited
my dad's been ardently working the genealogy websites now that he's, you know, a retired man. And he is pounding it like nobody's business.
So is he finding stuff out?
Well, here's the thing. Because the breakdown of my family, half Italian, mom's side, dad's side is split down the middle, Irish and Swiss. So his demeanor kind of falls on the Swiss side a little bit more. He's very very neutral in most situations.
Right.
But here's the thing.
Neutral.
Here's the thing that he's discovered in trying to track down the genealogy stuff. The Swiss, meticulous.
Oh yeah.
Record keeping.
Right.
Like he's got.
I have heard that.
He's got the Swiss side of our family back to the 1600s over there in Lucerne, Switzerland. Which, didn't they have one of the Olympics there recently? I think they did. Anyway. In Ireland.
Stay focused.
It's a mess.
Oh, yeah.
There is, like, you can't find
anything. There's
only
six different surnames back over there, right?
Well, it's not only that. It's like, stuff's misspelled, dates are wrong, papers are lost. So, he's been down, like, rabbit holes, wormholes, everything for Ireland.
Right.
And it has been, like, pulling teeth. Just to get anything that you have a shred of evidence might be, in fact, accurate. Meanwhile, Switzerland, completely different animal. We're like back to the 1600s over there.
I'm pretty sure I'm 20% Golden Retriever, 15% German Shepherd, you know, that kind of thing.
German Shepherd?
Yeah.
The hell does that mean?
Standard Poodle in there somewhere.
Oh. Labradoodle?
Yeah, Labradoodle. I'm all of that. So I have no idea. I have no idea.
So we didn't really get a chance to discuss this yesterday, me coming back off vacation, Steve. So I was down in the Caribbean soaking up some much-needed sun for some vitamin D. My lovely wife and I, a couple of our friends. And great week all the way around.
Right.
I'm going to pose to you this question, okay? On a Caribbean island, if you go there as a Western New Yorker,
right?
Give me the over-under. I'm there for 7 days. Give me the over-under for the number of Bills fans that I should run into on a Caribbean island in March. Give me the over-under.
All right, so I'll just say
what's
on
a fair number?
You want me to give it to you like per day?
No, like for
total.
I'm there for a week. What's the over-under on how many Bills fans I ran into?
Over-under? I'll say one a day. Seven.
Seven? Yeah, it wasn't that many. It was four. Four is the answer. Met some nice people from Lockport, some people from Amherst. It's unbelievable.
People live two blocks away from you.
I mean, and I think there was another guy in Hamburg or something. It's just like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all trying to do the same thing this time of year. We're just trying to get out of the weather for a break.
Yeah, just keep
so that didn't shock me, but this one did. So we're going on a walking tour with the resort activities manager.
Okay. You know,
the usual jovial island guy.
The Julie on the Love Boat.
Guy doesn't have a care in the world, you know? The hardest thing he's got to do is call the numbers out for bingo in the afternoon by the pool.
Gotcha.
You know, like, couldn't be happier. So he's walking us around. He's walking us from our resort into town. you know, where the cruise ships pull in and let all the people off and whatever. So we're walking into that area to kind of get a lay of the land. Hey, you may want to come down here for a day if you're tired of sitting by the pool, whatever. So we walk into town, and he's introducing us to the locals, you know, shopkeepers and stuff. You know, these people selling, cheese. These people are, you know, there's a jewelry shop over here, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
We stop at this one bar whose name I can't reveal on the air because it's inappropriate.
Name of the bar is inappropriate.
Well, I don't think I could say it on the air, right. And I don't think I will.
Then don't.
Anyway, so we're talking to the bar owner. Nice guy. Island native. And we're all standing there. There's like 30 of us, you know, just listening to the guy talk and this, that, and the other, what they have to offer. Oh, you'll love this. If you want this, go down here. You know, he's just kind of giving you little tips. And then finally he says, but I got to say one thing. He says, I got to shake this guy's hand. He reaches his hand out to me. Big guy, like big dude. My hand disappeared in his. And he's shaking my hand. I was like, I'm looking at him dumbfounded. Like, why does he have to shake my hand? We got 30 people here.
Right.
Why does he got to shake my hand? I had a Bills hat on. He goes, I just needed to shake the hand of a member of the Bills Mafia. Like, in a full-blown island accent, too. Like, I'm just like, this guy? Like,
right.
You know what I mean?
Oh,
I was blown away.
That's
he's
amazing.
Just like, the Bills Mafia is for real, man. And I got to tell you, you guys are a heck of a group. You know, and I was just like, I don't know. It was cool.
Right. Oh, nice.
Bill's Mafia is like worldly. It's crazy.
It is. It is worldly. That's
so that was
it's
cool.
Everywhere. I'm the same. I'm kind of the same way. When I go out play, and you can say not just in when you travel anywhere and you wear the logo, invariably you get shout out.
You get
a shout out.
It was pretty cool.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Just to see that, in a far off land. Man,
Very nice.
I'm on a dot of an island. In the Caribbean, and I got people talking to me about Bill's Mafia.
Yeah, one of my favorite hats is actually a Bill's hat that's St. Patrick's Day. It's green.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, have you got one of those?
No.
I got one. That's
Steve
my favorite
Johnson's
hat.
Got one of those. He wore it here when he was last with us on set.
It's one of my favorite hats.
But best thing I did, in the spirit of the day being green, my wife and I were snorkeling, and you expect to see fish and stuff. So they tell us that there are green sea turtles
that
often swim around. So we were on like a week-long quest to try to find these things. Because we, swimming with a wild turtle, like just
cool.
Kind of cruising along.
Absolutely.
That would be pretty neat. Last day, we found one. And we were swimming with that guy for a while. And just watching how effortless it is, man, just gliding. Guy's just he's not even using his back feet. He's just kind of cruising along with his front flippers. And we swam with him, like, behind him, over the top of him, obviously, because we're floating on the top. He's down there doing his business.
Right.
Probably swam with him for a good 150, 200 yards.
Nice.
You want to talk about being one with the earth? Like, that is.
You had a zen moment, didn't you?
That is being one with the universe right
there.
There
you go.
And it was totally cool. Totally cool. I felt completely unthreatened. You know, of course, you're always like, oh, yeah, watch a barracuda come up, take a piece of my leg off, and ruin the moment.
There is that.
But that did not happen, I am happy to say. So, yeah, it was a good trip. We got some good relaxation. Thanks to all the Bills fans that wished me well once they realized I was on vacation. They're like, take a break, Brownie, but hurry back. I was like, yeah, thank you very much. So, appreciate that. That was cool. So I just wanted to recap that a little bit, but. Yeah, four people from Western New York.
Right?
The guy in the mini mart, the nice woman we met in the mini mart, I'm looking for like snacks for poolside. She goes, "Excuse me, are you Chris Brown?" Which, like, you're not expecting that in
Who's
Saint,
asking?
Saint Martin. You know what I mean? I was like, "Yes, I am." Like, how do you answer that?
Right.
Like,
what do you have to do?
Affirmative.
Yes.
So met some nice people, and it was pretty cool. To see Western New York well represented down there.
Yeah, well, it's funny too because everybody out there, you can imagine everybody has it. You know, get vacation days, right? You know, kind of, and for us, from September, actually August through January, we're kind of all hands on deck here in the building, right? Everybody's kind of here. There are exceptions like this year. I've got a wedding I got to go to,
right.
You know, that kind of thing. But you know, you're all hands on deck. So when the off season comes, I mean, everybody starts to like, okay, when are you?
I gotta get some time.
You gotta take some time. I'm gonna take some time. We got all this stuff. What? You take, I'll take it. I was like, well, dude, it's the first week of free agency. What are you doing? Yeah. You know? Or now it's
there's
like,
no good time.
It's the draft. You can't
combine.
There's no off season.
Yeah, there's no good time. And I even like my, so when we were trying to schedule this thing, my wife's like, oh, let's go right at the end of February. We'll go the week after winter recess, school break. The prices will be better. You know, we used to get gouged all the time
because
we used to have to travel when the kids were off of school.
Yeah.
We don't have to do that anymore. So we're like, I was like, yeah, can't do that. She goes, why not? I'm like, I'm in Indy all week.
We're in Indy.
Can we do it the next week? So I was like, yeah. I said, you know, and then we're trying to travel middle of the week because the prices are cheaper.
Yeah. You got to do all that.
And then we just rolled right into free agency. I'm like, they can handle it. It's fine.
Yeah.
So that was that. Yeah. Speaking of free agency, Bills news of the day, Isaiah McKenzie released today. He was due a $250,000 bonus in his existing contract. That was something the Bills did not want to undertake. And by releasing Isaiah McKenzie, the Bills save over $2 million on the salary cap. And we'll get into where the Bills sit on the cap in the wake of that move. But over $2 million on the cap saved by parting ways with Isaiah McKenzie. And I think we really kind of saw the writing on the wall, Steve, because I know in our work text loop, we kind of surmised that his days could be numbered when they signed free agent wide receiver Deonte Hardy, because Hardy is a body type and skill set clone to Isaiah McKenzie, and he's younger.
Yeah, he makes those. He actually makes Isaiah McKenzie look like a big dude, but same guy, sort of skill set.
And as we've said, Steve, you can have a couple of exceptions on your roster body type wise,
right,
but that should not become a trend.
Right. And I made the point yesterday that even if they decided to keep Isaiah McKenzie on the roster, those two guys are going to be competing in training camp to see who gets the snaps and who's doing what. And again, there you have it. Here's your answer. It's two point whatever off the cap. The Bills make the financial move, and they're off and running.
Brandon Bean addressed the media late yesterday, and he did say, you know, before this move came down today, that other cap casualties could be coming down the pike, and that there's a chance they're not done in that department, and it may not end with McKenzie. So we'll have to keep our ear to the ground on that and see what could be next afoot here with respect to the Bills
roster.
There's
been a couple hundred guys signed around the league, a couple hundred, and one of the things that happened to Orlando Brown, who was the left tackle for the Chiefs in this last world championship they won, got snatched and taken away by the Cincinnati Bengals.
4 years,
And I know that I've said some things about the Bengals and stuff, and I don't, you know, the way they do things. But it's not all honky-dory there in Cincinnati either, because as soon as they signed Orlando Brown, left tackle, Jonah Williams asked to be traded.
He's asked for permission to seek a trade, and we'll see how that goes.
So
I am of the opinion that Jonah Williams is not a left tackle to begin with, so I don't blame the Bengals doing this in the first place. Jonah Williams apparently didn't take kindly to the signing, and he wants out. Apparently, he feels he can be a left tackle somewhere else. I would think that if he stayed on the roster, they would either transition him to right tackle or to a guard position, which I think might be his best spot anyway. There were times where he just looked overmatched last year at the left tackle spot. And if you remember, late in the season, he was one of the starting linemen that got injured. He had a dislocated kneecap. And missed the Bills' playoff game. Not that that affected the Bengals. They went in there with three backup linemen and won anyway here across the street. But, yeah, that's an interesting development there. And we'll have to see if, in fact, he can find, A, a trade partner, number one, and, B, get it approved by the Bengals, number two. As far as Brandon Bean's comments yesterday, spoke for over a half hour to the Bills' media contingent, and essentially – the bullet points on it are, I mean, they're as follows, okay? Because I tweeted this late last night just to kind of bring everybody up to speed. The Bills are going to look to add a bigger running back to their current allotment, which basically consists of Nyheim Hines and James Cook. He mentioned their weight specifically and said, we are going to be looking for a bigger back. That could be free agency. That could be the draft. We heard rumors that they were interested in Jamal Williams, who ultimately signed. Where did he go? Did he go to Atlanta? I can't even remember where he went. But Jamal Williams is off the market now. The former Detroit running back signed elsewhere. He also being Saints. Thank you, New Orleans Saints. Yeah. He signed. Bean also said that in the wake of the Tremaine Edmonds departure, he believes there is good talent on the roster for that middle linebacker spot. He mentioned Baylen Spector, Tyrell Dodson, and Terrell Bernard specifically. Those three, at least for now, will compete for that spot. He said Milano will not be a part of that equation. He is going to stay at weak side linebacker, and why would you move a guy that's all pro
right.
from the spot where he's playing for you? He also admitted that the AFC East will be tougher to win than it's been each of the last 3 years. Concerning new wide receiver Deonte Hardy, he said Hardy can play inside and outside in the formation. So the thought of him being only a slot receiver was poo-pooed a little bit by Brandon Bean. General manager also said he sees Hardy as their number four wideout in the pecking order. So that leaves open. You know Diggs is one. You know Hardy is projected to be the four. Gabe Davis is probably somewhere in between, I think, Steve, depending on what kind of caliber receiver they can add, either in free agency that remains or the draft. I think that will largely determine whether you need Gabe Davis to be your number two again this season or to be your three. I think in an ideal world, he is your three. But that makes me wonder, where does Shakir fall in?
Yeah, Shakir's got to be in there too. I think Shakir probably.
I really hope Shakir is more of the four and Hardy's the five, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, maybe, but I don't have a problem going into the season with Diggs, Davis, Shakir, and then Hardy at all. I don't have a problem with that. Now, somebody's probably going to get nicked. I don't know who's coming in after that. So I'm okay with those guys.
I think you need a playmaker, though. I really do.
Diggs is a playmaker.
No, I mean another one. Like another guy that you can go to 8 to 10 times a game, knowing how much they throw it, and he's going to produce on a weekly basis.
Well, I think if you can get settled on Shakir rather than start than moving guys. They had like 9 guys at slot last year.
Right.
I mean, Crowder, Beasley, Shakir, McKenzie, all of those guys took significant reps.
Part of the reason was nobody grabbed stranglehold of it, including McKenzie, who's no longer on the roster.
Right. Well, McKenzie had been struggling to do that since the entire time he's been here. We saw flashes of it for a game here and a game there, but never anything consistent. So if a guy like Shakir can step up to the plate and say, this is my spot and I'm not coming off the field, then that solves your problem. And we've seen him. He played well in the playoffs last year with more opportunity. So I'm okay with the guys they got. I really am. And I know everybody's going to be a little bit better this year, particularly a guy like Shakir and James Cook. And Gabe Davis will be better. And all he has to do is just, you know, catch the ball a little better. And he'll be significantly better. He'll have over 90 catches on the year if he does
90.
That.
90? All right.
How many did he have last year? He had 85. Did he not last year?
Catches? No way. Targets, maybe.
Okay, maybe. Anyway,
he was under 50 receptions.
If he has his
48 catches,
yeah, that's gotta get bigger.
I don't think he's gonna double it.
No, but he should. Yeah, not double it. Maybe.
I think
depends.
That's why it's for me. There's Davis is your three at best.
Maybe.
You need a two here.
I still think this group. You're going to win a ton of games with. They're still a quality group. You're still going to be a dynamo. And I think Shakir's the key. And I think if he's the two or the three, probably the three.
Your top three receivers right now are not better than the top three receivers in Miami. They're not. because they have Waddle and Hill.
You know, yeah, well, no, there's a lot of teams like that. That doesn't bother me.
The Jets just upgraded their wide receiving core. They now have Garrett Wilson. They added Alan Lazard in free agency, and they have Elijah Moore in the slot. That's probably comparable to what the Bills have.
Now, that doesn't bother me.
There's an arms race going on in the AFC, Steve, and the Bills are behind.
I will agree to that.
The Bills are behind. They are not Cincinnati. They are not Kansas City, although they lost Smith-Schuster, so we'll see if that impacts the collection of talent there. And Miami right now in your own division probably has they do. They have a better 1-2 combo than anything you can put on the field at receiver.
They got a better 1-2 combo than a lot of teams, most of the teams.
Right.
They're better than Kansas City.
Right, but Kansas City don't have to worry about them because they don't have to play them twice a year. The Bills do.
That's the
rub for me.
I got that.
So for my money, and I don't know how much money they're willing to shell out, but they need a number two. You gave Isaiah McKenzie a full season to seize the number three slot role. He was not consistent enough.
Couldn't do it. Yeah.
They tried to switch people out to fill the role. They even brought Cole Beasley back. That's how bad it was.
Well, they brought Cole Beasley back as an insurance policy because at the end
of the year, wasn't working.
Shakir was the guy that went in, and he played well when he got in there.
Then
it took him a while to get there.
Yeah,
but Shakir was the guy, and I'm okay with him again.
And they gave Gabe Davis every opportunity to seize the number two role. They left him in it the entire season. Granted, he had an ankle problem early in the season that probably slowed him down. But even Brandon Bean himself at the NFL Combine said the expectations were too high for Gabe Davis. Does that mean they expect him to be their number two again this year? Doesn't sound like it.
Well,
doesn't sound like it to me.
I get all that.
So to me, you got to upgrade there, and it's a guy that sits right behind Stephon Diggs in the pecking order. That's what they got
to
find.
It's hard to upgrade an offense that was number two in the league in scoring.
I get it, but you didn't get there, so everybody else isn't standing.
I get that.
Nobody else is standing, Pat.
But that is not. Yeah, I get that, but I'm not. Listen, okay, if they can do it, you should always do it. I'm not saying that. If they can find a guy that's better, you got to, particularly if you can fit it under the cap. I'm all about
it.
And I don't care who it is.
Yeah.
I don't care who it is. I don't care if you bring in a young Julio Jones and you make Diggs the number two. I don't care.
Right.
You're supposed to do that.
I guess I'm going to state it a different way to maybe help you understand where I'm coming from. Diggs is a playmaking commodity. Week in, week out, you know what you're getting. Okay? Gabe Davis has not answered that question.
You feel like you know his ceiling.
Week out perspective. So for my money, Gabriel Davis is not a proven playmaker. He can make plays. We've seen it. He can score touchdowns, multiple touchdowns in one game. But the week-to-week consistency is simply not there. And for a team in this window that is going for it, you need someone who is more than a player that I would categorize as a role player. And don't get me wrong, I love Gabriel Davis.
I
think he has value for this football team, and I think he will help this football team win football games. He has already in his first three seasons. You need somebody that when you stick him on the field, you know no matter the game, the week, the opponent, the guy is delivering every single week. Similar to the way Diggs does. Maybe not to that degree of production, but every week he's giving you 75 yards, maybe a touchdown, and he's going to have 8 to 10 touchdowns at the end of the year. That's what they need to add. Whether it's wide receiver or tight end, I don't care.
I don't know.
Gabe Davis is a role player in my eyes.
I'll just say this. The tight end class is very talented. There's guys coming out. There's no rookie tight end who's going to come in and give you what you're asking for. It's too hard to transition to me.
Okay.
They may grow into it, but they're not going to come out and be Kelce, Kittle, or even in the passing game, they're not even going to be Gesicki. They're not going to do that. They just won't. They'll be good. They'll have some moments, but they're going to be up and down like every young player is. The highest name-wise on the wide receiver free agent list that's still out there would be like an Adam Thielen, who's 35.
Yeah.
OBJ's out there. I get it.
His price tag is through the roof, apparently.
You can't afford him. Mecole Hardman? Okay, I'll listen. DJ Clark and Marvin Jones.
Oh, Chark.
You know, yeah. DJ Chark, I'm sorry.
Yeah. Jones is getting up there in age.
Right, same thing. Jarvis Landry. Okay. He's bouncing around. Why, there's a reason. This wide receiver class is just okay.
Not as good as the last two by far.
Or the last maybe three. There's just not guys out there who
are. So you think there's a supply problem?
This year.
Yeah.
I'm saying this. There's no question. There's with James Cook and with Khalil Shakir, you're not really sure that they're going to take a big step forward. You think they might. You've seen flashes of it. There's no way to know.
I like those guys.
I do, too.
And I think they'll give him a lot more. I wish they had played more sooner.
Do you think Gabe Davis played better in his first 2 years than he did last year?
I think all the numbers are pretty comparable. I know that in his rookie season, he had 35 receptions, and he had 7 touchdowns. Could have had 10.
Should have had 10.
Back
I
on
remember
penalty.
We talk about that a lot, about how he had those ones called
but
back.
But back then, he was the 4. Single mm-hmm. coverage all the time.
Mm-hmm.
An afterthought in the offense. Because they had John Brown, Cole Beasley, and Stephon Diggs. So he was the 4th receiver getting the other team's 4th corner.
Yeah.
Every week. He should score 7 to 10 touchdowns.
If you want a guy who's got some measurables, I mean, you're talking about guys like, you go all the way down the list, like Nelson Agholor and N'Keal Harry, the guys from New England. I mean, they got Nelson Agholor nicked the Bills last year in the game to Harry. They went to him. There was a stretch there and a drive there where he was all over him and was really the only bright spot in their entire game plan against the Bills. So you're looking for a guy who actually flashed against the Bills. Nelson Agholor is the guy. N'Keal Harry, I don't know what his – I mean, he was a number one draft pick because he had measurables, and you've never seen him in the NFL.
He's not even on the Patriots.
Right.
He's
both
in Chicago.
Those guys. Both those guys. They're out there. Cole Beasley's on this thing. Sammy Watkins is out there. Oh, my gosh. T.Y. Hilton.
Yeah. Look,
I mean, who?
I know finding a number
about?
2 – is a little bit pie in the sky because not only is it hard to find those guys because they're usually snapped up pretty quickly, there's also a price tag involved for anybody that's proven to be that.
Julio Jones is out there.
Yeah, I don't want him. His body's
failing.
He's
used up.
The other part of this is the bigger back discussion. And you and I noticed that a certain big back was just cut in Tampa Bay today.
Leonard Fournette
was cut by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He would certainly fit the model of a bigger back. He's huge.
A little too huge maybe.
He
might be a little chubby at times. But if you sit down with him, if you bring him in for a visit, you bring Leonard Fournette in for a visit, and he convinces you that he wants a start and he wants to come up and play and he wants to play well, I'll say this. That guy's a grown man. I watched him his rookie season. He had the rookie season when the Jacksonville went to the championship game against Pittsburgh back in 2000, what was it, 15, 16, something
17.
Like that, 17. That guy was unbelievable that season, his rookie season out of LSU. He was big, fast, agile, and he ran with some nasty.
Yep.
So if you can resurrect that in Leonard Fournette, that's a guy that goes and when he runs hard. He knows how to finish,
and
he's
you
big.
You could probably be affordable.
He's big.
You could probably be affordable.
So yeah, I'm all about that. I've seen the guy play and at a high level, and he's still in his mid to late 20s.
Right. So keep your eyes open for bigger backs that not only are on the market right now, but come available, much the way Leonard Fournette became available today. Bucks also cut tight end Cameron Brate. So that's another player that will likely draw some interest. And speaking of tight ends, Mike Gesicki is no longer a Miami Dolphin. He's a New England Patriot. as the Patriots perhaps try to resurrect a double passing combo at the tight end position with Gesicki and Hunter Henry. They traded Jonnu Smith to Atlanta earlier this week. So looking for more of a pass-catching option that Jonnu Smith never turned into in New England after they signed him to that monster deal to get him away from Tennessee.
Great is
he's interesting.
Interesting.
He's an interesting player. Yeah, super smart, Harvard guy, can do everything, helps you in the short to intermediate game, big red zone target. You do a lot worse than Cameron Brate.
Yeah.
We have to take a break here. We want to remind you it is OBL Fran Friday mailbag. Any question you have about the Bills, free agency, the league at large, let it fly. Steve and I will do our best to answer those. And when we come back, an update on DeMar Hamlin and his desire to continue his football playing career. We'll bring that to you next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you on this St. Patrick's Day Friday. Aaron go bra. Isn't that the phrase we use?
I think so.
But we wanted to talk about DeMar Hamlin. So the update that Brandon Bean provided on DeMar Hamlin, first he said he visited with him a short time ago and that DeMar has every intention to resume his playing career. He has already cleared several hurdles in terms of the number of specialists with whom he has consulted about his future playing career. But Bean said he believes he has one more specialist that he has to meet with. But all indications to this point are Hamlin will be able to resume his playing career. He said it's, I don't want to misquote Brandon, because I don't want to put words in his mouth, but he said it's trending in the right direction. So there have been no real roadblocks to his return to the field. So that's an encouraging thing, especially knowing the status of the safety position, Steve. It's a little bit better now because you have Poyer back in the fold. You have Cam Lewis back in the fold. You know Micah Hyde's here. So that's three right there. If Christian Benford is transitioned to safety, that's four. And then Hamlin would make five,
right,
provided he gets the necessary clearance to play again this coming season.
Yeah, he is. And what a story that would be. Unbelievable.
Oh, I mean, all eyeballs would be on that game.
Oh, my gosh.
For sure. I mean, even if he only plays on special teams,
right.
You know what I mean?
Can you imagine him coming up making his first tackle? Oh, my gosh. So, yeah. Hey, if the I'll say this. I know a lot of people, when you really start to think about what that means and what it would be like to see him out there playing and have and being his teammate and playing alongside him and playing against him, you're kind of like, wow, what a long way that has been for him to come back. But I'll say this about, you know, people saying, well, I would never play. I think it's too dangerous or whatever. When you're sitting there and the doctors say, give you the clearance and go ahead, most guys are going to go back out there. They're going to go back out. They're going to play again. And it'll certainly obviously depend on how DeMar feels and all of that. But most guys will say, man, yeah, I'm going to go play. Think about how many times we've seen players go to a different doctor to give him the okay. Because one doctor says, I don't think it's a good idea. He'll go find somebody that tells him it's a good idea.
Yeah. Second opinion.
If you got all these doctors lined up, the specialists, and they've all given him the green light for whatever at whatever level they have given him the green light, I'm telling you, he's going to be out there.
The other good news concerning DeMar Hamlin is he made the top 25 list in the league for performance-based pay. This is an initiative that the league put into play for players who, on their rookie deals, outperform their rookie contract based on playing time, production, a number of different factors.
Snap count.
Yeah,
all
et cetera,
that
et cetera. And DeMar, in the past season, ranked 21st in performance-based pay. How big was his raise? Well, DeMar got a bump of $652,000 and change. So good for him.
Let me tell you.
And that opportunity obviously was born out of Micah Hyde's season-ending neck injury, which afforded him the opportunity to start, play every week and rack up snaps, tackles, all kinds of production. And so he was rewarded with $652,000 in additional performance-based pay. So good for him. That was good to see.
And I'll say this, for those of you who are wondering, that is exactly what it sounds like, the way I understand it. He got 600 what? 600 and some thousand dollars.
652,000.
652. Folks, that's a check. It just, you get it in the mail.
Yeah.
And it's.
That'd be nice to get in the mail.
Think about opening up a check.
I get happy when I get a $5 rebate in the
right?
mail.
Right? Right. That makes.
652,000.
That makes your tax refund look like nothing. $652,000, and it's a check you get. Now, they'll have withholding out of it, whatever that is. But you're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars a check. Take home. Here you go. Thanks. Thanks for stopping by. Nice year. Dude, it is awesome.
Yeah.
It is awesome. I got a check like that one time in my career. So, well, not like that, but like that.
That's cool.
It was really cool.
I will never
really
experience.
Really cool. I'm telling you, let me say, that is a good day. That is a good trip to the mailbox, man. You go down, oh, look what I got. What is it? Open that up and going, honey!
We're having steak tonight.
We're going out to dinner. That is, and that's
surf
what it is.
And turf.
Folks, there ain't no, hey, we're going to, you know, here's a little bit now, a little bit. No, it is a clunks lump sum. Big clunker right on your desk. Poof.
Love it.
It is the best.
So
oh
that was
kind
of cool to see that.
That is great.
For DeMar.
And that's like lots of guys get it. A ton of guys get it.
Yeah.
The list I saw was the top
25. Yeah.
So you know there's a ton of them out there.
Yeah. Number one on the list was Marcus Epps, the Philadelphia Eagles safety. Who just signed somewhere else in free agency. Oh, no, he re-signed with them.
He was drafted in the sixth round.
Yeah, out of Wyoming.
Right. He's and there's
former teammate of Josh.
Of the top 25.
He made 880 in change.
880. That is a fat number. So 880. Of the top 25 guys, four of them were undrafted rookie free agents. Undrafted free agents.
Yeah, undrafted, yeah.
Tashawn Gibson.
Cater Kohu,
Miles
Miami.
Hartsfield, and the last one out of the top 25
is Jake Brendel.
All those guys got big checks, and I love that program because these guys come in.
Well, they earned it.
I mean, some
of it's by circumstance.
They probably earn more than that if you go by complete value because this is just a, like, they so far out-earned it that even the league feels bad about it. I mean, right?
But, I mean, much like DeMar Hamlin, the only reason Cater Kohu was on the field as the nickel corner for the Dolphins is because Nick Needham got hurt and a bunch of other guys got hurt in their secondary. Oh, well, let's try Cater Kohu. And then they found out, oh, you know what? This kid can actually play. And they left him in there. And,
right.
You know, so what's the result for him? He gets an extra $705,000 in his rookie year.
Yeah, I love that program. That is such a good thing. It's such a good thing. Young players, undrafted guys come in, and they sign for whatever they can get. And then they come in by happenstance or merit. They end up playing and helping the team.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Scooch them some cash. I love that.
As we said, it is OBL Fan Mailbag Friday. Your phone calls welcome at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or on the tweet sheet at OneBillsLive. Any question you have about the Bills, free agency, the league at large, the draft, let her rip. We lead off with Ron in Lackawanna today. What do you got for us, Ron? You're on One Bills Live.
Welcome back, Chris.
Thank you.
It's great to have you back.
Appreciate that.
Okay. I love what you're saying about Leonard Fournette. That would be a great pickup in that. I love Damian Harris. New England cut him last week. I would love to see him in our backfield. I think the incentive of the two games against New England he would have, I think that would be a big plus for it. And DJ Shark, I've always had my mind on this kid. I remember there was high hopes for him. I would love to see him with a quarterback like Josh Allen, somebody he's never had. And another thing I'd like to say, one more thing is, as far as Ed Oliver goes, if you can get something back for him, I would like to see them maybe, if they could do it with Boogie, add on another 10 pounds and move him inside. I'm going to hang up and I'll listen to what you say. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Ron. Appreciate the phone call. Damian Harris has been a Bills killer. The only time he didn't kill the Bills was in last year's playoff game where they pretty much neutralized him. But that guy was averaging like a touchdown a game against the Bills. He kills them when he's healthy. The problem is he's had some health issues. He's also, I don't know, you tell me, Steve. I guess he qualifies as a big back.
215.
He's right on the fringe there. He's like 5'11", 215. And the way he's put together, he doesn't look like a truck. You know what I mean?
Right. He's a little bigger, but yeah, he's not that. He's not a big back.
And he can run. Like, he's good
size. He's good size. He wouldn't count as big to me. I think 220, 225 is when you get up there.
I think that's what Bean's getting at, don't
you? Yeah, I think he's like a 230 guy, something like that.
Oh, even that big.
Yeah, I mean, the bigger the better. I keep telling you, man, make, you know.
You wanted Justin Zimmer as the fullback.
Give me my boy Justin Zimmer, the ball in the backfield, bro sleeve. He can scoot, you know, and, you know, hand him the ball. If you want a big back, go big. And worry about the speed and the agility and the pass-catching stuff later. Every one of these guys on every NFL team, every year, for all time, grew up carrying the ball when they were a kid. I mean, they all did. Every kid, every player was a running back or quarterback at some point in their career. Mm-hmm. Give him the ball. I'm telling you, Justin Zimmer is a missed opportunity. I don't know if I'll die on that hill. But I might die on that hill.
Wow.
I think the ability for players to be versatile athletes is an underrated quality. And for all the versatility that coaches, and not just the Bills, but coaches around the league talk about, I know that there are big, strong, fast athletes out there who, because of the position designation at the front of their name, never even get considered to do anything else.
Yeah.
And they should be. Whatever. So
DJ Chark is an interesting name. We already mentioned it in the previous segment. Ron in Lackawanna likes him too. His one giant season of production came in a year where he was the number one wideout. It came in Jacksonville, 2019. Gardner Minshew was his starting quarterback. He was the number one option in that passing game, which, by the way, for those that don't remember, was the Doug Marrone offense, which was rooted in a ground game. 73 catches, 1,008 yards, 8 touchdowns, and he made the Pro Bowl that year on a 6-10 football team. That's hard to do. After that, though, it's been kind of a mixed bag. Injured in 2021, his last year in Jacksonville, only played in 4 games, and then last year in Detroit on a 1-year deal, starts 10 games, 30 receptions, 502 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was kind of their four, their three or their four in their offense.
He's a 6'4 guy, but he's right at 200 pounds, so he's slender. He's, you know, and he came out of LSU. He was around, you know, he's got some measurables. He came out the same year as Josh did, so he's young enough,
right?
Yeah, I hear you. An LSU guy came out of that program that they turn out a lot of really good wideouts, particularly in that time frame. So he's intriguing to me.
We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls from the OBL Friday Fan Mailbag. And coming up in the second hour of the show, on St. Patrick's Day, what better to have the native Irishman himself, one Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, will be joining us in hour number 2. Plenty more coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are, One Bills Live on St. Patrick's Day Friday. You want to talk about a dangerous day, bro. St. Patrick's Day on a Friday. Woo!
Good thing it's cold and rainy.
People started the weekend last night.
Yeah, right.
I don't know about you. There were like no cars on the road coming into work today. I think people called it early.
I am done. Yeah, cold and rainy day today, and it's, with the winding up for the
which
weekend.
Which is not good. That's going to keep more people inside, and they're going to throw even more back. So
yeah, exactly.
Stay off the roads.
Oof.
Stay off the roads.
Be responsible.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go on this OBL fan mailbag Friday to Marie in Amherst next. What do you got for us, Marie?
Hey, guys. Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
So I have a question before I say the rest. First question is, if the Bills don't make it to the Super Bowl this season, what do you see happening with this team?
In terms of personnel?
Well, players, too. Do you see
I get it.
A major overhaul?
If they go 2-14, don't make it to the Super Bowl, yeah, it's going to be an overhaul. If they go 15-2, get to the championship game or go to the championship game and lose on a bad call, that's different.
Yeah, it is different. And look, I think, and Steve has said this several times, the Bills have a roster that's good enough to get to the ultimate game and win it. A big problem the last couple of years has been not playing their best on that day in the playoffs. This past season, I've said it before, I'm convinced that they were not in the right mental headspace to play a divisional playoff game against the team they just played 3 weeks prior where the DeMar Hamlin incident happened. Their emotional investment was elsewhere. It was not in a football game. They were out of gas, had nothing to give, didn't play their best. They lost to the Bengals. The year before, they probably did play well enough to win, but there were other circumstances that probably cost them the victory there. And then the year before that, they play the Chiefs. They didn't play their best
on that day, and the Chiefs
played the best game of the season, season that year, that game. And that's how, you know, they went back. What they do? Did they lose in the AFC? No.
They lost in the divisional rounds by – they lost in the AFC championship game.
Yeah, to Cincinnati.
Yes.
So no, – oh, no, that was last year. It doesn't matter. The Chiefs played their best game of the year in the AFC title game against the Bills in 2020 and went to the Super Bowl, and then you know what happened after that. So, yeah, for my money, as long as the roster, for the most part, the core remains relatively intact, this team is good enough – to go all the way. Got to make some tweaks to it this offseason. They've got some cap situation to resolve and still keep the roster competitive in what has become a full-blown arms race in the AFC, let alone the AFC East.
Here's the thing. We all remember, all of us are old enough to remember the 17 years the Bills could not, for the life of them, make the playoffs. So you get Brandon Bean in here, you get Sean McDermott in here, and they start doing things differently, and all of a sudden, and Josh has something to do with that, no question, Diggs, whatever, they all have something to do with it. They're going to keep on doing exactly what got them to the point where they're one of the best teams in the league every year. They're going to keep doing exactly that. Now, if that means they rotate guys in and out, they're going to have, you know, last year they had a ton of guys, or we were worried because there was going to be like 10 or 13 guys washed out of the team, they're going to have to replace them. Well, they did replace them, and they had a new offensive coordinator and a new offensive line coach, and they still were number two in the league in scoring, and they were doing all that stuff. So this year it's going to be that. They're going to come in, and they're going to continue to do things that make them a contender. So it doesn't mean they're going to do the exact same thing they did, and they're going to get the same results because they're going to be out of the playoffs, and everybody's going to start, you know. No. You run your program the same way that the Alabama Crimson Tide and the LSU Tigers and Clemson and Georgia run their college programs. You run it at the level that it takes to get there every year and to be right there. So that's what they're going to do, and they're going to continue to do that. And they do it better than other teams do. That's why they're a contender.
Mm-hmm.
They do it better, and that's what they're going to keep doing. They're going to keep bringing in really good players and coaching them up.
We've got to take a break here, but when we return in hour number two, we'll be joined by Pro Football Focus NFL analyst Sam Monson, who will be joining us. He's going to recap some of the top moves from around the NFL in this first wave of free agency. Sam Monson coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
101 Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health.
Here in hour number two on a Friday, Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, 1 Bills Live, and pleased to be joined now by NFL analyst for Pro Football Focus, one Sam Monson. Happy St. Patrick's Day, Sam. How you doing?
Doing well. How about you guys?
We're doing all right.
Really good.
The first wave of free agency, Sam, is kind of passed over us here. And, you know, we're a little more than a week through in terms of when people started making phone calls and such. And I know you put something together on Pro Football Focus about most improved position groups. And a former Bill is right there on the list with some of your assessments there. Why don't you just kind of shed some light on that if you could?
Yeah, Chicago's linebacker core. Obviously, Tremaine Edmonds, one of the prizes of free agency in terms of the contract, but also, you know, how many boxes he ticks as a sort of top-tier free agent, young, in his prime, coming off a career year with incredible size, speed, range, all those kinds of things, the perfect type of signing. And they added TJ Edwards, a guy from the Philadelphia Eagles, who... So almost the opposite type of player, marginal physical tools, a guy that's had to do it the hard way coming up as an undrafted free agent, but has played at an incredibly high level as well. The Bears adding two of those guys to one unit, I think, is pretty exceptional for them.
And we've been talking a lot, particularly in the AFC, about it kind of being an arms race where Kansas City has kind of set the standard. You kind of got to score with them. Cincinnati with the three big wide receivers that they have. And Buffalo also being number two in the league in scoring. I mean, you kind of light it up. Do you see any trends in free agency that speak to that?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily when it comes to free agency. You know, I don't see any particular positions being supercharged because of that kind of trend. But you're right. The AFC generally has continued what they did last season of this arms race and more and more teams really loading up to try and contend. Look what Miami has done, trading for Jalen Ramsey and now arguably having two number one wide receivers and two number one cornerbacks. The Bengals have continued what they did a year ago to keep working on that offensive line and sort of follow the Kansas City mold of making sure that their star quarterback has the platform to work from as much as humanly possible, having been burned by that right at the start. So I think that's the right way of characterizing it. More and more of these super teams appear to be manifesting in the AFC. If the Jets get Aaron Rodgers as well, that's another team that could be contending. It's starting to look like the haves and the have-nots in terms of just the conference. Almost all of these contending teams are in the AFC.
And I know that with Sean Payton in Denver now, and they're throwing an awful lot of money around here in the early going, particularly on the offensive line with McGlinchey and Powers now there from San Fran and Baltimore respectively. But they're also, you know, spending some money on defense. I mean, Zach Allen goes there on a 3-year deal. Al Singleton, they're able to keep in the fold on the defensive side of the ball. I know Perine was a smaller signing, but it's pretty clear to me that Walton Penner group that now owns the Broncos promised Sean Payton that money would not be a problem. It doesn't appear to be at all. I mean, they're throwing it all over the place.
Right. And I think it's also sort of suggesting that, you know, this approach that the Saints have had to the salary cap for years, kind of max out the credit card, pay it off at the last possible minute and do it all over again. That might have been a Sean Payton driven approach. And all of a sudden, Denver is potentially going to be taking that route with the salary cap and with spending as well, with their owners that are perfectly prepared to put some money behind things. So, yeah, this might be the case for Denver for a while to just spend like crazy and deal with the salary cap implications down the line.
Yeah, we've seen, too, the flavor of the year, flavor of the month kind of the year was the Detroit Lions. They were on Hard Knocks. They took a big step forward offensively. Their defense struggled, but yet in this free agency period, they took some steps to getting better, particularly in the back end of their defense.
Yeah, I really like the moves they've made, in particular, cornerback. I kind of love, almost step by step, the Lions have done this rebuild project in a really smart way, which isn't to say that they've made every pick right. You know, they've missed a bunch of players And rather than let that derail the entire project, they've tried to come up with a way of fixing it and sort of retrofitting positions that have struggled at so that they don't have to go into the draft and desperately chase need with that first round pick. So they bring in Cam Sutton, they bring in Emmanuel Mosley, a pair of cornerbacks. Sutton has played well both in the slot and out wide. And Mosley, you know, I think is a little bit maligned, but for his entire NFL career, it's been pretty solid. So they now know that the worst case scenario is they go into the season with those two guys playing a lot of snaps and they're fine. You know, they no longer have to chase and figure out, can we take a cornerback as high as our top first round draft pick? And they can really go after best player available. So I think that's the sort of smart way of playing free agency, which is getting to the point of the draft where you don't have a glaring hole that has to be filled with one of your first picks.
Looking at the AFC East, Sam, the Patriots knew they needed an influx of playmaking talent. They throw Jonnu Smith overboard, who was a colossal disappointment as a free agent ad. He gets traded to Atlanta for a song. And while they have added some name-recognizable playmakers in the form of Juju Smith-Schuster and Mike Gesicki, I guess I'm struggling to find the diversity that they're going to bring to an offense that already lost Jacoby Myers. To me, Smith-Schuster is kind of a wash there. And I don't know that Gesicki is putting you over the top, although it makes for an intriguing combination with Hunter Henry.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, really the point is that the Patriots, I don't think, have made enough big moves to contend in this arms race that is the AFC, with the Jets adding Aaron Rodgers potentially and Miami adding a number one corner, another one. And, you know, all these teams that are really swinging for the fences just to compete with Buffalo and Cincinnati and Kansas City. The Patriots are sitting there kind of doing business as usual. And look, Patriots beat guys, Patriots reporters will say, this was not a good free agent group. This was not a ton of, you know, clear impact playmakers just sitting there on the shelf waiting to be picked up by teams like New England. And that's true, but that's when you need to get creative. You know, that's when you need to go and find somebody by trade. And maybe you could prize T. Higgins away from Cincinnati with the right trade offer, whatever it is. You know, there's ways of doing this, but the Patriots haven't. They've just gone, okay, well, let Jacoby Myers walk, we'll replace him with Juju, and we'll bring in Mike Gesicki, and there's still the draft to come, and that's what we're going to do. And it's fine. It's not, you know, they're not bad moves, but it's difficult to see how that propels them into the same conversation as the teams we expect to be at the sharp end of the AFC playoffs, you know, come 9 months' time.
That's really what they have done really throughout Bill Belichick's tenure. I mean, they sign a running back, a wide receiver, and a tight end. They got some. Wow, sounds great, except it's James Robinson, it's Juju Smith-Schuster, and Mike Gesicki. All of them have some limitations, and they're not like, you know, they're not signing, you know, Saquon Barkley. You know, they're signing James Robinson, who's a nice back, but not a difference maker. Then they signed James Ferentz, the guard, Calvin Anderson, Riley Reiff, the two offensive tackles. Just, yes, the right positions, certainly positions that they could have used last year, places where you're looking to upgrade for what they looked like a year ago, but not household, game-breaking, difference-making signings.
And these were the kinds of moves that were seen as genius when you had Tom Brady and the nucleus of a championship team sitting there waiting to win it all, and you just needed some guys to come in and fill the gaps and make everything come together. That was perfect, but that isn't there anymore. Like, this is not the nucleus of a championship caliber team. Mac Jones is not Tom Brady. Like, these are not the moves that are catapulting this team forward. And the other element is, I don't think it's the same AFC landscape that it was when they were, you know, in their heyday and they were the favorite every single year. I mean, just in the division, like, this is a very different landscape to the AFC East. Throughout most of the time, New England was the primary team there. You know, all three of the other teams look like they are going to be trying to contend this season. That, I don't think, ever happened during the time that the Patriots were at their best.
What do we make of how much better the Miami defense truly is. There's going to be a scheme change there with Fangio in. We know that. And then Ramsey is a big name acquisition, but he's entering his age 30 season. Xavien Howard is no spring chicken either and dealt with a groin injury for much of last season. Didn't look like himself at all in many aspects or through many stretches of the 2022 campaign. They wanted to get faster at linebacker, so I understand why Alandon Roberts isn't brought back. David Long's a nice player, but I don't know that he's an elite free agent acquisition. I feel like the Dolphins might have bigger names, but they're older, and I don't know that they're demonstrably better defensively. You tell me. Maybe Vic Fangio can get more out of them than, you know, the previous guy, Boyer.
Yeah, I mean, I think going to Vic Fangio is a huge thing here. Like, that cannot be overstated, the kind of impact that he can have on this defense. He's one of the best defensive minds in the game. He's also running the defense that everybody is sort of pivoting towards
right
in today's NFL. And I also think the players that they have, by and large, are better scheme fits for his defense than they were for the old one. Jalen Ramsey, because of his size, because of his physicality, we think of him as this kind of number one press cover corner, this outside guy that plays pure man coverage. But he's always been a better player in zone than he has been in man-to-man coverage. And I think he could actually thrive in this defense. They'll have the choice whether to keep him inside in that kind of Charles Woodson Green Bay role that he ran the last year or so with the Rams, or to move him back as a true perimeter boundary corner. But either way, playing that much zone, I think, plays to his strengths. Xavien Howard, the same thing. He's at his best when he's got his eyes on the quarterback and can make plays on the football. And then the rest of that defense is already certainly up front. They're very strong. I think they can get better given how much youth is there as well. I think you're right. They might have a shelf life, you know, given the age of those two corners. But I think for a couple of years, that team could be very, very good on defense.
Okay, well, the last team in the AFC East we have to talk about is the New York Jets. And there's only one story. It's, you know, when the Aaron Rodgers trade happens, if it happens. And my question to you is, what are we looking at? Are we looking at a first rounder and some players the Jets would send to Green Bay, two first rounders? Are they asking for, you know, what are they asking for that doesn't have this deal already done?
Honestly, I'd be surprised if the trade was anything more than a first rounder, one of them. And I'm not even sure they're getting the first rounder. I think that might be the holdup right now, is that Green Bay is holding out for at least pick number 13 overall, and the Jets don't want to give them that. It's such a fascinating conversation because nobody has any leverage. Like, everybody needs this deal to happen. The Jets, if they don't get Aaron Rodgers, have no quarterback. They have nothing at the position and no real options to turn to. And the Packers have basically openly said they want rid of him, and Rodgers has said he expects to be playing for the Jets. So neither side has any kind of leverage in this deal, which makes for a fascinating negotiation of who is going to blink first.
How could it be? I mean, could it be possible now, because the Jets do have some space, that they make a play, an 11th hour play for Lamar Jackson instead?
I mean, I think that probably has to be the move if this collapses. You know, I don't think they're going to pivot from Aaron Rodgers to Lamar Jackson if there's a way of avoiding it. But if somehow this whole thing falls apart and Rodgers retires, or Rodgers ends up staying in Green Bay, I think that has to be their move, is pivot to Lamar Jackson, try and construct a deal that Baltimore won't match and try and get that done. And then the last swing of the fence is probably going to be doing something crazy in the first round of the draft and moving up to try and target one of these quarterbacks. But these are not, you know, ideal scenarios for the Jets if this doesn't come through.
Right. I mean, I just can't imagine the pressure on Joe Douglas in that front office when you got the guy splashed across New York's tabloid papers in a Jets uniform, you know, or in a jet plane as Tom Cruise in Top Gun. I mean, it's just the New York media pressure, and he would probably dismiss it out of hand. But you've got a fan base that is now expecting this to take place. And if it doesn't, yeah. I mean, there's going to be a holy war in New York.
Yeah.
No, it's true. But the only thing he has going in his favor is that the Packers need this to happen as well. You know, they have to get rid of him this offseason if it's going to be anything other than catastrophic for their salary cap situation. It gets extremely painful for them if he retires as well, rather than is traded away. So everybody needs this to happen. It's just a case of agreeing on what it's going to cost to make it work.
What is, now that we've talked about how it's got to work in both these clubs, and all, what is the absolute worst case scenario? Is it Rodgers retiring? Is it that trade not happening? Rodgers going back to Green Bay and then they got to deal with it? What's the worst possible scenario when everything
falls
apart?
For the Packers, yeah. For the Packers, I think the worst case scenario is probably Rodgers returning to Green Bay unhappily and basically making their life miserable for an extended period of time.
I'm sorry to be laughing, but you're right, man. It's just, it's beyond awkward.
Yeah. And you know, his contract becomes an absolute nightmare for them if they don't get rid of him this year. If he lasts into next season, that contract becomes an absolute torpedo for their entire salary cap, even if they tried to trade him away next year and successfully did it. Like, this is the year they have to move on from him if it's going to happen. So him deciding, oh, you wouldn't make this happen for me? Well, I'm going to come back. I'm going to be unhappy about it. I'm going to make everybody's life miserable, and I'm going to force you to eat this contract going forward. I think that's the worst case scenario for them.
And for the Jets, wouldn't it be that the Packers don't budge, the Jets don't budge, it gets all the way to September, which is kind of the line of demarcation, and they wait until the last possible minute to then trade him for, even if it's for a nothing, they trade him to the Jets then, and now he's got to go in cold, try and make it work, and the season goes belly up for the Jets because the guy just showed up.
Yeah, I mean, that's bad for them. I think any scenario where they don't get him is pretty catastrophic. Maybe they could pivot to Lamar Jackson and make that work. But if they swung and a miss all the way, you know, the worst thing for the Jets is probably to miss out on Rodgers, miss out on Lamar, make something aggressive happen in the draft, trade up to, you know, 3, draft a quarterback, and draft the wrong one, you know, and they have a rookie performing badly. Well, they could have had Aaron Rodgers and Lamar Jackson. That's probably their nightmare scenario.
Nothing right. Could be more Jetsy. Right. It's okay. I just need him to. He's really getting close to entering Tom Brady territory. I just need Aaron Rodgers to go away. There's just too much of Aaron Rodgers on my television screen every day. I'm growing tired.
Well, now it's not
I'm
even
growing
his
tired
fault.
Of the whole exercise.
It's not even his fault now. He says, "I'm ready to go for the Jets. Let's go." And now it's the Packers, you know, and the Jets willing, you know, unwilling to meet each other's price. And that's, I mean, for the Jets, it's about having him in the house, getting ready, getting him up to speed, and getting them in, like, to be a well-oiled offensive machine by the time the season starts. That's best case for the Jets.
I would like to think, though, that the Jets want this done before the draft so they know what kind of cap. I mean, the Packers want capital. And I would imagine, most notably in the form of draft choices, that they could use right now. I got to believe that the Packers want to get it done just so they can get some draft compensation for this year. Wouldn't you think, Sam?
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, I think the holdup probably is that the Packers want pick number 13 from the Jets. And I doubt very much whether the Jets want to give that up. And I can imagine that being the sticking point in terms of arguing this thing out. What's most amazing to me, though, is how history is just repeating itself. Like, this is the Brett Favre saga almost to the letter happening, what, 15 years later. It is insane how completely alike this is from what happened already when Rodgers was on the other end of it.
Yeah, and it would be perfect for Green Bay to have another Aaron Rodgers show up in replacing Brett Favre and having Jordan Love turn out to be Aaron Rodgers for another decade and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's their dream scenario, is it plays out exactly the way it did with Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers.
Paint, knowing how much you guys kind of chop up the film and everything, Sam, maybe just paint a picture for us, if you could, on some of the newer Bills additions, most notably D'Onta Hardy, who looks quick as a hiccup. And is kind of a Isaiah McKenzie clone, which is why Isaiah McKenzie was released today. And then maybe Kyle Allen. I know he hasn't gotten a ton of playing time since, you know, he played in 10, 12 games for Carolina when Cam Newton got hurt way back in 2019, I think it was. But maybe just a thumbnail sketch on those two, if you could, just for our listening audience.
Yeah, D'Onti Hardy in particular, I think, is a really fun player. Obviously, there's some concerns. He basically didn't play all last season. It was with a turf toe injury. That's obviously not a good injury for a speedy wide receiver that relies on quickness and burst and those kinds of things. But he's a dynamic playmaker. He's obviously a small, shifty receiver, but he's quick and fast. He's got the ability to win kind of at all levels. He can take the top off a defense as a deep threat. He can get the gimmick stuff underneath and beat people with the ball in his hands. He's got an incredible amount of missed tackles forced for a guy that hasn't touched the ball as often as many other players. And he just is incredibly productive for how often he's been on the field. And last offseason, I was sort of running through wide receivers, looking at a variety of different scenarios against press coverage, against man coverage, against, you know, all these kinds of things. And the list was like a who's who of number one X receivers, Ja'Marr Chase, Stephon Diggs, A.J. Brown, all these guys. And then D'Onti Hardy was always there, and you had to remove him from the list because he hadn't played enough or hadn't got enough targets. But this guy has been incredibly productive per snap. And if the Bills can keep him healthy, this is by far the best quarterback that he's ever had throwing to him as well. I know he had Drew Brees, but that wasn't really Drew Brees by the time, you know, he was playing with D'Onti Hardy. It was the version of Drew Brees that couldn't really get the ball where he needed to get to it, that everything was underthrown. You know, it wasn't really the same guy. So outside of that, it's been Taysom Hill, Trevor Siemian, Teddy Bridgewater, Jameis Winston. Like, Josh Allen is a massive upgrade at quarterback for him. And then Kyle Allen is one of those guys that, you know, has shown he can come in and start some games if it's absolutely necessary, but has been very sort of scattershot or hit and miss when it comes to, he'll make some big plays, but there'll be a lot of big mistakes coming along with it as well. So kind of classic boom or bust type of backup quarterback.
Sam, thanks as always. Enjoy your St. Patrick's Day. We appreciate the time.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks, guys. Take it easy.
All right. That's Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus joining us there, breaking down the first wave of free agency across the league and then providing the little thumbnail sketch on Kyle Allen and D'Onti Hardy. He's obviously high on the Hardy acquisition. I think he believes it's opportunity and quarterback talent with which he's working that will spike his production.
Yeah, he's high on him. It seems to be from what Sam just said about Hardy is that he's also pretty consistent. And when he gets a chance, he makes the most of it. There hasn't been any of these moments where he has been poor. Per snap, when he's been in there, he's been good.
Health is the issue.
Right.
Smaller framed player, you can get nicked pretty easily in this league when you're a small guy. I mean, he's not much bigger than me, and I am not football material. So he's got the skill set to make it work. Just got to keep him on the field and available every week. And, yeah, he could very well produce. Listening to Brandon Bean yesterday talk about him, he said what impresses him is he's not just quick off the line. He'll be running a 12-yard route, and he's still – or not a 12-yard. He's running a go route, and he's still picking up speed at 12 yards, and he's fast off the line. So,
right.
As Sam said, he can take the top off of defense, but Brandon Bean said yesterday he's going to play inside and outside. He'll line up in both places because of his shiftiness. They want to get him out in space, and I think they also want to use his quicks as a two-way go in the slot. So it'll be interesting to see how he is deployed in the Bills' lineup this season. We have to take a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls. OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. We'll get to the tweet sheet as well. Next, here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are, One Bills Live on this St. Patrick's Day Friday. The OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open, and we're taking your phone calls at 803-0550, so let's get back there in short order, and we go to Eric in Williamsville next. What do you got for us, Eric?
Good afternoon, guys. How are you?
We're doing
all
right.
And Chris and Steve, I respect everything you guys do. I've only been a Bills fan for 7 years. I'm a 49er fan for 50 years, but I've only lived in Williamsville for 7 years. So.
Okay.
You're still welcome. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, so I got a couple of questions for you. First off, I think Josh Allen went back 3 years with Daboll leaving. I think Ken Dorsey didn't take care of him the way he should have, and I hope he does better this coming year. And we all know what the ramifications are going to be. They'll probably move on from him. Secondly, I think Leslie Frazier should have been fired after the debacle in Kansas City with 13 seconds when you're playing the outside. And then, more importantly, with Aaron Rodgers coming to the NFC or AFC East, what do you think about McDermott's job coming up here? If we don't make the championship or go to the Super Bowl, are we at risk of losing him? And then the last question I have for you is, I agree with what I already heard from you guys. We do need a number two receiver, and I'll just listen. Thank you.
All right, Eric. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, I mean, I think much to the point we made earlier in the show, I think we were talking with Marie earlier in the show, I don't think McDermott is on the hot seat in any way, shape, or form unless the team completely implodes and you're talking about a 4-13 season or something like that.
Right.
And even then, I think he might get a one-year reprieve.
And even so, even if, like, if Josh gets hurt, like if he has like a Jamison Crowder injury or something and he's out for 8 weeks or something, you know, that okay.
I don't see it. The good outweighs the bad by such a large degree in terms of what McDermott has built here in association with Bean. I almost feel like there's this contingent of Bills fans that have jumped on the bandwagon in the last 4 years. Or 3 years or 2 years, that didn't go through the hardship of the 17-year drought.
Right.
I don't think they have an inkling of an idea as to the depths that this franchise sunk during that period and how bad it was. And so now that the team is experiencing year-over-year success but not getting to the promised land, I understand people are impatient this day and age. This is the on-demand generation. I know it because I have two kids. There is a lot of good going on here at One Bills Drive, more than we've seen in a long time. So throwing the baby out with the bathwater, I think, is foolhardy. You keep taking your swings at the ultimate prize. And if you can keep the core intact, keep the franchise quarterback happy, and all of that, you're on the right track, and you're way ahead of most of the other teams in the league. Now, the mountain to climb is the Chiefs, and they have a quarterback that some would say is decidedly better than Josh Allen in terms of manipulating defenses, making the right decisions at the most critical moments, and turning in a spectacular play, although Josh has had more than his share of spectacular plays in his short career. He also has the benefit of not only the most experienced, but perhaps the most dynamic play caller since Bill Walsh. So those are two things working very much in the Kansas City Chiefs' favor. Can they mimic that, duplicate that, rise above that? That is the challenge. And you bet your bottom dollar that Brandon Bean is working day and night to try to craft a roster that can accomplish that. And Sean McDermott is tweaking and trying to work a offensive and defensive scheme to overcome that as well. So this isn't just a roster that tries to get better from one season to the next. It's a coaching staff that goes through with a fine-tooth comb as well to be better themselves.
Yeah, and Josh was accounted for exactly the same number of touchdowns as in 22 as he did in 21, and he also threw for more yards in 22 than he did for 21. I don't know how you get to the point where you think he regressed. At the very least, he was even where he was a year ago. And I'm with Brownie on a lot of that. Certainly, the division's getting tougher to win, and you can make it. You can make or break your number two wide receiver. Sure, broke Brownie, and I think if you can upgrade always at any position. I don't care what it is. If you can get a better player, go get him. And, you know, if you can do it without giving away, you know, the keys to this franchise, do it. And I think that's where they how they got to where they're at now. Leslie Frazier, well, you got your wish. If you wanted him fired after the 13 seconds, although it's hard to do that when the defense is the top two or three in the league every year, and then fire your defensive head coach, your defensive coordinator. So you can say what you want. They did make the move this year for whatever reason. So a lot of what you said I agree with, except for the fact that, you know, I don't think Josh regressed. I don't think McDermott, like Brownie said, I don't think McDermott's on the hot seat in any way, shape, or form. I don't think they're going to have the kind of season that would even give you a glimmer of that. It's hard to win in this league. And when you're there, right there, every single year, that's no reason to change what you're doing. It's just it's a reason to do what you do better, particularly on that day. There's 10 million moving parts to putting an NFL team on the field, and you've got to get a good number of them exactly right before you're any good, let alone just feeling the team. The Bills are doing a lot of that right all the time, every day, every year, every season, under this ownership group, under this GM, under this head coach. So we don't like the results every year, just like the fans don't, Brownie and I. But, man, oh, man, you know, just do what you're doing better because you're almost there right now. You're not making too many mistakes, and the mistakes don't have anything to do, really. Let's face it, and maybe you think – They're making mistakes. I'll tell you, it goes back to the Sunday they play on. It doesn't go to what they do in March, April, May, June, and July of this team. What happens on game day is really where they fall short. It has nothing to do with what they're doing this time of year. They're doing everything right in this time of year. And they're doing everything right a ton of times on game days too. But they run into some pretty good teams and some really good players. It's hard to win. And – you know, for whatever reason, they haven't been able to get there. But, man, oh, man, I'll tell you what. It's hard to throw stones at what the Buffalo Bills are doing year in, year out, week in, week out.
Let's go back to the phones, and we go to Dave in Niagara Falls. What do you got for us, Dave?
Welcome back, Chris, and hello, Steve.
Thank you.
I just had a question about the guaranteed contract, like, how it affects the cap, say a person in like Ed Oliver's position if he was moved, and the second question I had was if you had any opinion when you were at the combine about a linebacker from Oregon, Noah Sewell.
Noah Sewell, yeah. All right, let's start with the first part of your question, Dave. I would say, and thanks for the call, it's a guaranteed 10.7. as a fifth-year option salary. So that means if he's on the roster or not, it's still a $10.7 million cap hit. So they're kind of stuck with Ed Oliver. I mean, even if they wanted to move him, and I don't have any indication that they do, he's still going to count 10.7 on
if
your...
If they trade him, it'll be on the other teams because it's salary, right?
Well,
it's guaranteed,
it'll be guaranteed
by the team that gets him. If the Bills trade him, it will not go on their cap.
I'm not 100% sure of that.
It has to be that way because the other team has to take the cap. You can't cap hit twice. The other team can't pay him 10.7 and not have it go against their cap.
Right.
Because he gets it because it does get fully guaranteed. But if you're the team paying it, that's who gets it on their thing. But because it's salary, it doesn't go on your cap until you pay it. So if you trade him before that, the only thing that goes against it would be the signing bonus he got as a rookie top 10 draft pick, a number 10 draft pick. That goes on against your cap.
You still incur the dead money because you guaranteed it. You were the team that guaranteed the fifth-year option. It's not actual money, but on your cap, it's dead money. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Hold on. Let me see.
So you're not paying the money.
That it's dead cap if you cut him, not if you trade him.
Oh, only – that's right. You're right.
If you cut him, yeah, it's 10.7 against your cap. If you trade him, it's 10.7 on their cap, not yours.
Right.
Now, I don't know what he got as a signing bonus. There's nothing recorded as a signing bonus
here. No, it's just a straight fifth-year option.
It's a fifth-year option. So here's the thing.
I misspoke. I apologize.
Right. So if they trade him, all that 10.7 goes on the other team's cap. You don't get any of it. You don't. It doesn't count against you at all. But if you cut him, yes, you're on the hook for all 10.7. Plus, you're paying him the money anyway because it's guaranteed.
Yeah,
that's how it works with Ed Oliver. But that's because his contract is that of a first-round draft pick, five-year contract. The last year of the contract by CBA, by league rule, is guaranteed once you pick up that option. The right. Bills did so. So that's how that works. And, yeah. And because it's fully salary, it's all salary. It's not bonus or anything like that.
Right.
If you trade him, that goes on the next team.
Thanks for straightening that out for me. I don't know why I got so crossed.
Well,
because
if you cut
him,
it is.
We've been talking for a – yeah, right. But we've been talking for a month about him as a potential trade option if you could find somebody that needs that. And then I was like, oh, you can't trade him, the dead cap. But I got all crossed up. I'm still a little rusty. That's coming right. Off vacation.
No,
here,
we got it right.
I'll be honest, I have not watched tape on Noah Sewell yet. I'm kind of eyeballs deep in free agency, so you'll have to forgive me. I didn't see him test there, the Oregon linebacker. And incidentally, we have some other news that we have to get to quickly here. It's breaking news. Dane Jackson has re-signed with the Bills on a one-year contract. Last week, they tendered the restricted free agent to a one-year qualifying offer, which meant they retained his contractual rights, and now he has re-signed. Brandon Bean yesterday, Steve, said they were talking with Dane. They were trying to see if they could reduce his cap number because the tender number is $2.627 million. And they were trying to reduce that figure to be more cap-friendly. But today, you just saved over $2 million on the cap with the release of Isaiah McKenzie.
Yeah, but they probably would have known that yesterday that they were going to do that. And I don't know that one led to the other. But if they gave Dane a two-year deal – And the 2 years he was guaranteed that 2.6 tender, he didn't, you know, won't matter so much when he gets it if he's actually going to get it. So maybe he gave him some relief and they gave him a 2 year deal and spread it out over 2 years or gave him a voidable year next year or whatever.
Right. So Dane's back in the fold. The cornerback position is a little deeper today with him coming back on a 1 year deal for 2023. Very quickly, Noah Sewell did all right testing, 4.64 in the 40, had a great 10-yard split, 1.57. Vertical leap, 33 inches, 6'1.5", 246. Bigger, thicker linebacker. I don't know that he has the coverage skills to fit the scheme. That's my only concern with him. But I do have some work to do on him, and I'll try to give you a better answer a little closer to the draft.
They don't pick him at 27.
Oh, no, he's not a first round.
You know, so down the line at some point, if he's there, you know, either trade up, trade down, get him, and still, you know, land him. No question they're going to bring in some more depth players for linebacker, whether they get that in the draft or whatever. But, yeah, it is possible because, like you said, Brownie, he'll be around for a minute in this draft. He may not go on day one.
Break time for us. We're back to close it up here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Back here on One Bills Live, one brief dip into the OBL Fan Friday mailbag, Steve. From Robert, why do you have to have a number two wide receiver and not a number one wide receiver and a bunch of different guys, or have a tight end be your number two? Also, can you please explain compensatory picks? Compensatory picks, very quickly, you need to have a net loss of free agents over a certain period of time. There is a window of time. The league doesn't really explain it. We already kind of laid out our case for a number two wideout. Tight end could do that. Steve thinks it's difficult. We can get into it more on Monday. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you at 1 on Monday.